And now, stay tuned for a broadcast of a recording of the Second District Supervisors Candidates Forum that happened Tuesday, January 28th at the Ukiah City Council Chambers. The primary election is March 3rd. The forum was sponsored by the Mendocino County Women's Political Coalition and the American Association of University Women and the Ukiah Daily Journal. The candidates for Second District Supervisor are Maureen Mulhern, Joel Sonula, and Mari Roden. The candidates started with opening statements. The first voice you will hear is that of candidate Mari Roden.
I love Mendocino County. It's been my home for 28 years. I've raised two smart, hardworking, and kind sons here. I've started a grant writing business that's brought over $100 million in funding to Mendocino County for programs ranging from youth violence prevention to homeless and housing services to economic development. I've served three terms on Ukiah City Council, including providing leadership and making tough choices to address the impacts of the 2008 financial collapse. We need tested leaders on the Board of Supervisors who have made those tough choices, have a vision for the future, and have the technical skills to get us there. I'm honored to offer our community the experience, knowledge, and abilities that I've gained from my decades of service to be your next Second District Supervisor.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for showing up tonight and the three organizations for putting this on. My name is Joel Vaco-Sonula, although I might adopt Swanula. I like that. My family's roots in this county date back over a century, and I've seen what it's like to struggle in small businesses in this community. I've started one myself. After spending a decade as a financial analyst, productivity engineer, program manager for the Ukiah Valley Street Medicine team, and a program or now a property manager, I've seen the struggles of everything in this community. I've touched a little bit of every industry. I'm now the owner of an independent real estate brokerage, and I absolutely love being self-employed and learning new struggles that come with living in this community. I want to assist Mendocino County 2nd District and the county as a whole in achieving forward-thinking and result-based accountability. I would like to aid in bringing financial transparency as my number one thing to the table. I believe that we are in a situation where government transparency and how our dollars are being spent are not benefiting the community. And I believe that if they were spent with a forward-thinking and progressive mindset, that we would be able to achieve much more with the dollars that are coming into our community.
Thank you. Ms. Mulhern?
Thank you. Thank you, everyone that came out tonight and those watching online for being engaged in the democratic process. And thank you to the host organizations. My name is Maureen Mulhern, and you can call me Mo. I'm a born and raised Ukiahian. I have two daughters. The oldest is 21 and a real estate broker, and the little one is a fourth grader at Grace Hudson Language Academy. I am a small business owner. What I enjoy this election is that my signs are placed in every neighborhood across the district and in the yards of folks that identify with 11 different political parties. I want to make sure that everyone has access to ask me questions and give me feedback. I'm available on Facebook and at various community events and available for appointments in my office if people want to reach out to me. I am most proud of the work on City Council the last 5 years, of being accessible, building relationships, and that the challenging projects that lingered for years are now complete. I'm proud to have forged coalitions with diverse groups as a member of the council, and I look forward to continue that work as a member of the Mendocino County Board of Supervisors.
Okay, thank you. First question. Jumping right into the issues. What specifically can the Board of Supervisors do to get the homeless folks off the streets and provide humanitarian assistance to them? If your answer involves spending money, where will it come from? Starting with Ms. Mulhern.
Sure. So step one is to take law enforcement out of social services. We need one centralized number that citizens and individuals experiencing homelessness can call. We need a team of social services providers, probations, and volunteers to go out and counsel individuals that are setting up camp. Most importantly, they need to have a place to go. There are options like a dorm-like shelter in an old hotel or apartment building with wraparound case management services. There is temporary housing in portable shelters or potential car camping. We need to offer individuals ongoing classes and information so that before they become homeless, we can prevent possible evictions and also provide support to those that are recently housed. We need the ordinances to be consistent throughout the municipalities in our community, and it's imperative that the continuum of care function at a high level in order to receive our fair share of funding allocated.
Thank you. Mr. Swanula.
So as a program manager of the street medicine team, I got valuable experience with boots on the ground, actually dealing with the large population. The first thing we need to do in this industry is actually have true, real numbers that represent what's happening. We were never the largest per capita homeless in the United States. That number was a falsified number from 2017, where our homeless rate was far overinflated for funding purposes. So right there shows you that we already have no transparency in the industry as to where our money's coming from. We want more, but do we want to solve the problem? I don't see the problem being solved, but I do see more funding coming in. So in order to solve the problem, we have to focus on the people that are almost unsheltered. Excuse me, I don't like the word homeless. The unsheltered that are almost at that point are people that we need to focus on right now, because if we can't stop them from becoming unsheltered, then how do we expect to ever get anybody back into housing? We have such a large population on the fringe of paycheck to paycheck who can barely survive, and we're not even paying any attention to that group of people and how we can support them with the funds that come into this community to avoid the people from becoming homeless. And as for where the funds are going to come from, government money is going to have to solve this solution, and we have to not, I have to stop, spend it recklessly.
Ms. Roden.
First and foremost, homelessness is a humanitarian issue. Number one risk factor for homelessness is poverty. But it affects everybody. It affects businesses incredibly, and affects the residents, and affects our environment, and it affects tourism. I am working with the Homeless Continuum of Care in my capacity in my work, and I'm helping them develop a countywide strategic plan to address homelessness. The plan isn't complete yet, but it's looking at prioritizing outreach and intervention teams, permanent supportive housing, and also improving the way that the service providers work together themselves so that they can provide services more effectively and efficiently. But I also think that just as important as providing services to people who are already unsheltered currently, that we need to focus also on upstream causes and prevention of homelessness. Yeah, according to the Marbit report, Mendocino County has a comparatively high number of people.
It's a loaded question for 1 minute.
I was interrupted by the phone, but okay.
She should have one more second here. All right. Next one is a housing question as well, starting with Mr. Swanala. A high percentage of District 2 residents are seniors. How would you prioritize funding and services for our seniors, and will you work to maintain existing senior center programs funded throughout the county?
Absolutely. The funding that's there for the seniors has to continue to grow. We have one of the largest populations of people coming up on retirement that we've ever seen. And as for the senior centers, you know, co-op living is going to be the answer to a lot of issues, not stick them in apartments and let them live out their years, but actual cooperatives where people have things that they can do, activities that happen, and a life that they can continue to live into retirement. To just say that we're going to build housing for them that they can have as their retirement is not enough. We have to make sure that the life they live is one that they enjoy and one that gives them opportunities so that they can continue to live life.
Yeah.
Ms. Roden?
Yeah, well, seniors, I just read a statistic recently, are at a very high risk of homelessness, the baby boomer generation. So we need, whether it's owner housing or rental housing, we need to have housing that's affordable to everybody in the community. The price of housing is directly related to the lack of availability, so we need to increase the amount of housing that we have here. When I was on the city council, we laid the groundwork for a large stock of the low-income housing that we have now that's gone up in the city in the last few years. And as supervisor, I intend to expand multi-income housing, but focused on entry-level housing for working people. But we need to be able to do that, and we can do that without, not at the expense of our ag lands and open space. We need to adhere to the vision of the Ukiah Valley Area Plan, where we concentrate housing close to the city center. I favor conservation easement at Lover's Lane. And to do all this, I can be over. Something's wrong with the timer. City-county cooperation is what I was going to talk about. Is my minute really over?
No, you can talk.
Okay. All right, I'm almost done.
Well, how much did she have when she stopped? How much time did she have left? Right. I'm going to give her 5 seconds.
City-county cooperation is essential, and I plan to bring that to develop housing in the Ukiah Valley.
Thank you. Ms. Mulhern.
Thank you. So I've been on the city council for 5 years, and you may have noticed the beautiful PEP senior housing project that is on Main Street. The city additionally has a housing trust fund, and we're working hard to create more senior housing behind Rite Aid. It's important that our apartment complexes and multi-dwelling units are near the urban core so that people have access to active transportation and public transportation. My work as the mayor last year, we worked with various senior stakeholders to improve connections and not duplicate services. It is important that we work together as a community to make sure that our community is an age-friendly community.
Thank you. Okay, another housing question. What, as a county supervisor, what, and this is for Ms. Roden, what would you do to address non-mental health-related housing in general? This is just the need that's been talked about earlier tonight to build housing. How do we make that happen? And I'll complicate it a little bit by bringing another concept, again, from the prior discussion, is how do we do that and also protect ag land and forest land as is required by the general plan?
Well, again, the city of Ukiah ought to be the jurisdiction that builds housing, and housing ought to be located where urban services are. That's an imperative in the era of climate change, and we need to spend less time in our cars. But what county can do, and the Board of Supervisors can do, is set policies that incentivize housing to be developed within the city limits. That has to do with negotiating annexation with the city, developing city-county cooperation. And when I was on the city council, I was a member of the tax sharing committee. We were negotiating a tax sharing agreement, which is a prerequisite to annexations. So when I am on the Board of Supervisors, I intend to revive the tax sharing committees and begin the annexation process. That's the way that we'll develop housing of all types that's of the sort we need.
Ms. Mulhern.
Thank you. I'm very proud of the work that I've done on the City Council around housing. The City of Ukiah has 143 new units of housing, both subsidized and market rate, in the last 5 years. City of Ukiah is one out of 12 cities in the entire state of California that is meeting ARENA goals. The county of Mendocino has ARENA goal of 1,300 units. We need to work collaboratively with each city to make sure that we are centering the affordable housing as near to the urban center as we possibly can. We also really need to think about the variety of types of housing that we need. There are ADUs, there are multi-unit, there are single-family dwellings, and we are such a diverse community, we can't forget that we have different income levels, and that there are many people that don't qualify for subsidized housing and don't have an affordable place for them to live.
So in order to answer that question, you first have to understand that the reasons why we have this problem is because lack of investing by our government into affordable housing, zoning policies that have limited multi-building units in communities. We have a lack of protection and support of people who rent, so rent controls and tenant rights, and a minimal support for low-income people who seek to buy to get out of the rental market. And if I can leave you with any impression on housing tonight, I would love to say infill, infill, infill. We do not need to take up our green space. We do not need to take up our ag land. We need to find the dilapidated buildings that are run down all over town. I'm sure all of you see them every day in your drives to work, and we need to make them into cooperative housing. And one of the best ways to do that is by working with nonprofit housing options in the community. They have lots of money, and they're ready to spend it, and they're ready to invest it in the communities and make it a good place for us to live. So why would we not be having them build cooperative housing? And then also capping how much rent and housing costs can rise. California did a great job with the 5% increase on that recently. And many myths hide behind the big money that opposes rent controls.
Thank you. Ms. Mulhern, are there tensions that exist between the city of Ukiah and the county? If so, what's the fallout from this seeming mistrust, and what would you do to remedy this?
I announced that I was running for supervisor in January of last year because I was ready for a shift in the leadership style at the County Board of Supervisors. We absolutely need for the city of Ukiah and the county of Mendocino to collaborate and work to serve the community in the best way that we can. I have a track record of building coalitions and compromising so that we can get things done in our community, and I'm happy to bring that to the Board of Supervisors.
Mr. Swana.
I take very seriously the idea of being an elected official who ensures that our county government is financially transparent and actually tells the real picture of what's happening. The Good Persons Club, which has ran this county for decades, is not something I'm looking to gain special interest from. I'm looking to get in there and shake things up and poke the bear a little bit and make them think outside the box, because I don't believe we've been outside the box in Mendocino County for decades when it comes to our government transparency. And if elected, I'll make sure that it's my highest priority to bring transparency to the community, not only in what's happening, but also in the finances.
Ms. Roden?
I think the relationship between the city and the county can be improved. And I would like to build on the solid relationships that I have with many people in county government, as well as the solid relationships I have with people here in the city, in city administration. I have a track record of working, bringing people together to solve problems, and I know that if I am the second district supervisor, we'll be able to bring these two jurisdictions together for the good of the people who live in and call the Ukiah Valley their home.
Thank you. Different way of asking a question that was asked to the other candidates about what is your position on, and this goes to Mr. Swanala, what is your position on renewing the contract with the USDA for wildlife services? At present, residents having maimed animals on their property have no assistance available like we did in the past.
We need to adopt non-lethal alternatives for wildlife. That doesn't mean we can't continue the same processes. I'd like to see them eventually fade and go toward the non-lethal being the alternative. Population control is very important, so keeping the scientists around population controls that know what they're talking about and understand wildlife very closely is very important. And I don't know if anybody's very familiar with some of the alternatives, but some of them are pyrotechnics, propane cannons, laser technology, frightening devices that are visual and auditory. And so, you know, on the other end, it's always nice to say there's alternatives, but some of these don't align with the climate action changes that we're trying to do in this community. So, you know, it's always good to say the grass is always green on the side, but there are people doing it in ways that are not lethal, and we need to be looking toward that. But at the same time, adopting all new policies with some of these other tactics doesn't seem very environmentally friendly.
Ms. Roden?
Mm-hmm. Well, I absolutely share the values of non-lethal approach to wildlife management. We need a program that addresses the interface of our agricultural-based economy with the wildlife that survives in our county, without needlessly killing animals. There's substantial scientific evidence that shows that prevention can work to control wildlife that's predators that are threatening animals on ranches and so on. I would prefer if I had been on the Board of Supervisors and when they recently discussed this, just offering a one-year contract with the Wildlife Services and then directing staff to come up with an alternative plan so that there would be a transfer to a non-lethal alternative without a further gap in services to ranchers who depend on their services.
Thank you. Ms. Mulhern?
Sure. So I believe that there are important opportunities to change the status quo and work towards a more progressive program. And I don't have time for lawsuits. We need to make sure that we are communicating with our local partners. We can't meet everyone's needs all the time, but I believe that there are compromises that can be achieved. There will be a presentation from Sonoma County Animal Rescue to the board in February about ways to remove animals with non-lethal options and how to have a similar program in Mendocino County. I look forward to seeing that presentation and wish that the board had scheduled it before they made their decision to renew the contract with the USDA Wildlife Service. I'd prefer a non-lethal method, but understand that ranchers and property owners may need to use lethal force by gunshot in an emergency. The lethal predator control methods that the USDA Wildlife Services employs are ineffective and outdated. We need to move into the future and understand the natural ecological system and respect what nature itself would do. For transparency and government funding, I would spend that $170,000 in the following ways. Education to the community and reconstruction of the Mendocino Wildlife Association or an organization that public can coordinate with to assist with. Offering assistance to property owners to prioritize a focus on prevention plans, including fencing, night shelters, fox lights, and a compensation program for local ranchers for livestock loss if all reasonable measures were met to protect the livestock, increase spay and neuter programs in Round Valley and other rural areas of the community.
So sorry.
And increase the feral pig hunting licenses.
Thank you. Sorry. Ms. Roden, another housing question here. Please define what you think affordable housing means in relation or in context of the county's housing element.
There are technical definitions of affordable. There's, low income, very low income, affordable, and I don't have memorized exactly what those thresholds are. But in a general sense, affordable it means to me what people at any income level, that they have the ability to buy a home or to rent and have a place to live.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Mulhern.
So I believe that most of our residents don't qualify for affordable housing, which typically applies to subsidized housing. We have a serious need and a gap for market rate housing for individuals that are working families so that they can afford to live in a nice place for their children to grow up in. The city of Ukiah has worked hard to bring in all types of housing, including market rate for professional level as well as subsidized housing, and I would like to continue that work as a County Board of Supervisor.
Thank you. Mr. Swanula?
Affordable housing is something that you go home to and you're happy to go to, not something that you get pushed into because you're in poverty. And we look at right now affordable housing as just a place to shove people that can't afford middle-income housing. And looking at that, it makes me sad that the places that we put these people in poverty into are not places they call home. They're just a shelter over their head. So in order to start going in the right direction and to get affordable housing to be something that works for everyone in this community, we need to focus on making it a place that the people building it would actually want to live.
Okay. Here's a short follow-up question then, just going around again. What's the county's greatest need? What level of housing in your respective opinions, all of you, is the county's greatest need? Is it for what you might call, market rate housing for professionals and people coming to be in administrative kind of higher paying positions? Is it on the low spectrum? You could say all of it, I guess, but where do we start and what do you see as the greatest need and what to do about it? Ms. Mulhern.
Sure, absolutely. Let's see if I can do the circle of life and of housing in 30 seconds. So the way that it used to work is that you lived with your parents, and then you moved into an apartment, and then you bought your first small home. And then your family grew, and you bought a larger home, and then you downsized to a smaller home, finally moving into a retirement home. We don't have that mix of housing at this point. So we need absolutely all types of housing so that people that are in subsidized or very low single-family dwellings can move into higher levels, opening that up for people that are in subsidized housing to buy their first home, that then we can use the subsidized housing to get the homeless individuals off the street so that they can have a roof over their head. So we absolutely need every kind of housing in our community.
Mr. Swanla?
Yeah, I agree. It has to be a good mix. But if I had to key in on one type of housing that we're short in this community, it's middle-income housing. It's middle-class housing, three-bedroom, two-bathroom, houses that are minimal size, not hard to take care of. To buy a two-bedroom, one-bath anywhere in this town, you're spending almost $500,000. And I don't know what's causing that, probably over-lending and cause a false supply and demand imbalance. But in order to fix the problem with the housing, you have to do it in a mix that goes in all categories. You can't just take care of low-income housing, middle-income housing, or high-income housing. It has to be built all at the same time. And you can mix low-income housing into middle-income housing developments. You don't have to just have all homes being built. You can mix in condos, townhomes, community living, cooperative apartment living. A lot of people believe apartments are only for renting, but you can create apartment-like complexes that are cooperative living where everything is shared collaboratively and you get your piece of that housing.
I agree that we need a mix. However, I think it's about 49% of Mendocino County's population is eligible for Medi-Cal. So clearly, affordable for half the population is lower entry homes and apartment units. But the problem with price has to do with the availability of housing. It has to do with the stock of housing. So if we create housing of any type, at the high end, the low end, we relieve some of the pressure on the price. So I support market rate housing, middle income, but I think the biggest need is for lower income housing.
Thank you. All right, Mr. Swanula, the Measure V question. It's popular tonight, and it keeps coming up here. Would you support, did you support Measure V? Would you support the counties enforcing Measure V?
I had a lengthy conversation when I was door knocking with a gentleman who works for Mendocino County, MFP, Mendocino Forest Products, and he drilled me on this, and I actually learned something because I opened my ears and I listened. I didn't realize that the amount of herbicides that they were using were so small. Does that make me think that that's a good thing? It was on the upwards of about 2 milligrams per tree. He kind of almost got me going in the direction of supporting it, and then I kind of felt like there was a car salesman trying to sell me on something that I shouldn't believe in. So I immediately went back to my stance, and I said, I absolutely want no herbicides used when it comes to tree management, and there has to be an alternative to this, whether it cuts into your profit margins or not. I do believe that there is a middle ground where we need to listen and understand the larger forester, which I believe is one of the number two income revenue generators for our community. So we can't just throw them under the bus and just make everything go away for them in a profit margin, obviously, because they'll stop doing business. But we do need to stand with the people on this one. It was a democratic vote that happened, and it needs to be exercised in the way that democracy is exercised. No more hack and squirting or leaving trees for fire prevention.
Ms. Roden?
The voters passed the ordinance Measure V, passed the initiative Measure V, and the Board of Supervisors is obliged to implement it. In the case of Measure V, the process was unreasonably delayed by the State Attorney General. But while I'm interested in hearing from scientists and ecologists, I haven't yet spoken, but it's my plan to find out more about the impacts of hack and squirt. Ultimately, I believe that the county should enforce what the voters express. We just need. Well, I guess I'm not quite finished. But we have to make sure that it's implemented in a way that's fair, productive, and legal.
Thank you, Ms. Mulhern.
Sure. When our voters take a stand and work to pass a measure, we have to respect that work, whether we are for it or not. I don't believe that the County Board of Supervisors stepped forward early enough to mitigate the damage that could be done by leaving dead standing trees, and now there is a pending litigation. There are options that we can work with to remove the trees so that they don't pose a fire risk, and now that there is a potential lawsuit, there's an opportunity for the Board of Supervisors to work with private landowners to make sure that we work as a community to help get the standing trees out of the forest and create a wildland fire management program. We need to support alternatives and make sure that they are created to be as sustainable as possible. I look forward to collaborating on this issue with industry and the community.
Thank you. Ms. Roden, does Mendocino County have a responsibility to address climate change at the local level, and if so, how?
We absolutely have a responsibility to address climate change at the local level. Here in Mendocino County, we are on the front line of disasters that are climate-related. Fire up here in Northern California is our main concern. Preparedness is key. That's why I support the work of the Western Hills Fire Safe Council that works to build, educate residents on defensible space. And I'm proud to say that I am endorsed by the chair of the Western Hills Fire Safe Council, Gene Chin, and other leaders, John and Dylan Rogers and Ula Rand. When I'm on the Board of Supervisors, I want us to commit to maintaining the fire break up on the Western Hills. But in addition to the catastrophic risk of wildfires, we also have potential catastrophe brought to us by PG&E with the public safety power outages. So we need to protect our most vulnerable citizens during power outages, particularly people that have medical needs and the elderly.
Ms. Mulhern.
Thank you. So I've been endorsed by the Sierra Club of Mendocino County, and I want to start by telling you the projects that I've worked on as a city council member. We have a recycled water project, and there's a great drone video if you go to cityofukiah.com/projects. We're working on finding for solar power for the city. We have replaced half of the street lights with LED lights, so we're about 650 have been replaced, and we have a plan to do 100 per year. The mixed waste organics program was stalled for years and was put into effect the first 6 months I was on the council. I belong to a grassroots group called Climate Action Mendocino, and we meet monthly to work on ways to share goals with our community. I work hard to improve and promote active transportation like the bike routes in Ukiah and public transportation. So for those of you that have not ridden the MTA, I have set up an appointment to have a tour, and you can learn how to use the app. So the MTA is moving forward. I have way more to say about the waste stream and what we can do about that, but my time is up.
Mr. Swanula.
So top priority is to ensure the county pursues environmental stewardship to provide clean air, water, and land. Individuals and businesses need to be encouraged to participate in managing environmental risks and impacts. Seeking new programs to help us transition to clean energy, that's one of the top things we need to do. Stop all attempts to allow offshore drilling. We don't need that in our county or anywhere near us. We have so many natural resources that conservation efforts need to be put into place to protect finite resources, and we have a lot of those in this county as being a large landmass. There isn't much we can do to offset the larger catastrophic world issue of climate change, but we need to be taking it very seriously. And the newly formed Climate Change Advisory Committee, you know, it's I hope that there will be accountability and that the county will have this be the solution to the problem. But whenever funding flows places, it's funny how these organizations just kind of pop up, and you never really get any change coming. So I'm hoping that this time around we see change in this committee and they take seriously the effects that need to be done.
Okay, here's a follow-up question, and it kind of flows right into Ms. Mulhern's statement. Do you have any suggestions regarding lessening our use of single-use plastic bottles, such as the bottles sitting before you? And I need to say the candidates are not responsible. It was the committee used the plastic water bottles, but it's definitely an issue, and we all know it. So do you have any suggestions for the county, at the county level, and how we can lessen the use of plastic water bottles?
Sure. So there is a woman named Heather Guevara from Zero Waste Mendo, and she is mostly staged in Fort Bragg. She actually has funding from the city of Fort Bragg to go through not only their government buildings, but do outreaches to businesses and apartment owners so that they can work as a community to reduce the impact and teach new skills about reusing. And I'm very proud of the fact that I have not bought a single-use water bottle in a year and a half, and have worked as a city council member to try to bring as many refillable water stations to our parks as possible so that our kids are not using plastic water bottles either.
Mr. Spongula.
Yes. You know, banning it's not going to do anything. We've seen what bans on things do. They never solve the problem. They just create people to go around it to figure it out. We do need to stop having a dependency on it. On the bottled water topic, the sales tax revenue that's generated from it, I mean, there's no incentive for our local establishment to ban bottled waters or to not allow them. We'd have to force the people that are creating these things to create a different product so that we could actually stop our dependency on bottled water. And I'd be lying if I sat up here and said that I haven't used bottled water in the last X amount of years of my life. I cave every now and then. It happens. I'm thirsty and I'm at a gas station and need a bottle of water. But I do mitigate as much as I can. And, you know, voting with your dollar is the best way to change the impact. It's stop buying it, stop needing it, and we will see the bottled water, plastic in general, start to leave our community.
I agree with the end of Joel's statement that we just need to quit using it, first of all. Second of all, from the county perspective, the county can, as policymakers, we can direct the county to stop purchasing and using and buying and be a model and begin that process. We can also advocate to other agencies, school districts around the county, and we can, I want to hopefully have the chance to talk about strategic planning, but if that does occur at the county level, environmental conservation, those sorts of things can be a major policy thrust of the board and direct staff at the county level to implement those policies.
Okay, Mr. Swanala. What is your perception of the status and health and viability of the county's employee retirement fund? If you think there are problems, how would you address them?
It's a mess. They overpromised, and they absolutely are never going to be able to come through with what they said they can unless they start taking out bonds or borrowing against other programs that are going to take away from forward-thinking future generations of having things that they need in order to survive. I think it's time to come to terms with the fact that the people who were given those pensions and plans were lied to, and the people that were fighting to show people that when it was happening need to be brought back to the table, and we need to understand what they were saying at the time when it was happening. Economists and CPAs and people out there who understand finances very well, I'm a financial analyst myself, so you know, having people at the table that actually understand looking at cash flow and how something can be sustainable would be the only way to solve that problem. By putting a bunch of people in the room who are dependent on those, you're not going to solve the problem. You're going to just continue to have the problem get worse.
Thank you. Ms. Roden?
Well, this pension issues have been a problem for public agencies, universities, cities, counties, all over the state. It's my understanding, and this is an area that I want to learn more about, but it's my understanding that the current board has done a great job getting a handle on this pension obligation debt, and that we're set. You know, we're set on course. The problem isn't solved, but we're on a steady course.
Ms. Mulhern?
Sure. So in my research of the retirement board, I have learned that they are about 70% funding. The interesting thing is that their advisor just recently announced his resignation. So this could be a very real opportunity to improve the funds as well as to create a portfolio that is made up of the most sustainable companies that we can find. And I do stand with the employees, and I hope that they continue to receive the retirement benefits that they were promised.
Thank you. this is similar to a question asked of the other group. According to the Childhood Trauma Action Team of the county, the county's substantiated rate of child abuse per 1,000 children is over 19%. That's nearly three times the state average of 7.5%. And this carries a cumulative cost to the county of greater than $87 million as of 2018. How can this be happening, and what will you do about it? If you're on the Board of Supervisors, and please be specific. Ms. Roden.
I've written a lot about this in grant proposals, and it's directly related to poverty. That's a huge risk factor again. And then I heard some discussion at the earlier candidates about ACEs, which are adverse childhood experiences. And, you know, those are those have been documented to have, you know, that many, many children who experience adverse childhood experiences grow up and have trouble as adults. Like I was saying earlier, we need to have a focus on prevention and the upstream causes of later mental health issues. And so I would like to see us continue what First Five Mendocino is doing in the 0 to 5 age group and continue that through the elementary and older grades, providing prevention and supportive services to kids at risk.
Ms. Mulhern?
Absolutely. So let's be honest about the generations of families we have in Mendocino County that live in poverty. We need strong partnerships and a focus on prevention for parents and caregivers to build protective factors, which research shows prevent child abuse and neglect. The Center for the Study of Social Policy enumerates 5 key protective factors that strengthen families: parental resilience, managing stress and functioning well when faced with challenges, adversity, and trauma; social connections, positive relationships that provide emotional, informational, instrumental, and spiritual support; knowledge of parenting and child development, understanding child development and parenting strategies that support physical, cognitive, language, social, and emotional development; concrete support in times of need. Access to concrete support and services that address a family's needs can help minimize stress caused by the challenges. Social and emotional competency of children. Family and children interactions that help children develop the ability to communicate clearly, recognize and regulate their emotions, and establish and maintain relationships. I'm sorry, I have to talk so fast. Happy to talk any other time. Long time.
Mr. Swanla?
It is absolutely poverty, 100%. When you live in poverty, you have, I believe it's like a 10% chance of getting out of the sociological impacts that you'll be affected by in your life. So figuring out how we can help those lower income populations in our community to have the things that the rest of the people that aren't experiencing poverty have. You know, talking about sociological impacts, I mean, you've got organizations around here that say they're helping different people that are in poverty, yet them and maybe 2 other people are pocketing 10 to 15% of that money and making $400,000, $300,000 salaries. I mean, what's the justice in that? There isn't any. We have to stop throwing the money into the pockets of people and start putting it into the pockets of the people who actually need it to get themselves out of poverty and to get away from adverse sociological impacts that create you to not be able to thrive.
Can I make one little...
Yes,
it's not exactly a rebuttal, but an add-on to what Mo was saying, that I want to make a plug for the School of Performing Arts and Cultural Education Space, for whom I write many grants, and that they do an excellent job. They provide, you know, resiliency for kids, giving them an environment where they feel safe and can express themselves and gain confidence, you know, to grow and have the best chance as adults.
Okay, thank you. All right, let's see. We're starting with Ms. Mulhern. Is the current Board of Supervisors achieving accountability from staff and the county departments? And presumably, if you think not, what would you do differently?
So I would like to actually use an example. So in October, the Board of Supervisors heard an item for a request for a sound system. The following day after the request was heard by the Board of Supervisors, I went to a meeting where the sound system was already in place. Clearly, that sound system had been ordered, regardless of the fact that the Board of Supervisors had not yet heard that item. So, as a council member and as a Board of Supervisor, I expect complete transparency with the public's money, and I expect that our leadership will make sure that the elected officials that are given the responsibility of presenting that money for the community have every opportunity to say yes or no. And if there's an urgent item that needs to be purchased, then I would like to know exactly why and given the option of which budget fund it could come out of. At the end of the day, the buck stops at the top, and if the Board of Supervisors does not like the way that they're being led, it is their job to fix it.
Thank you. Mr. Swanola?
Could you please repeat the question? Sorry.
Yes. The question is, if the current Board of Supervisors achieving accountability from staff and the county departments, if you think there are problems in that regard, what would you do differently?
Yeah, I would like to go on a long random tangent right now and talk about accountability with the Board of Supervisors and our government at the local level, but I'll just stick to saying that I, as a supervisor representative, will not allow for myself to not be accountable. I plan on having a complete transparent platform and reporting exactly what I'm doing with my time and the monies that I'm advocating to be spent. Currently, I do not believe that there is any accountability at the supervisor level, and it takes me back to talking about that good old person's club that's been running this county for many decades. It's time to break that up and to make the monies accessible to the greater community so that we actually have smart, forward-thinking growth that benefits everybody, not just a select few interests of special interests.
Ms. Roden?
Accountability depends on open communication channels between county staff and the Board of Supervisors. And it also depends on members of the Board of Supervisors being actively engaged all the time, up to speed on all the issues, receiving regular reports from county department heads, and that will make it possible for members of the Board of Supes to hold staff accountable. When I was on the City Council, I initiated a strategic planning process that's still going on in the city. And it's so important for there to be goals and objectives that are clear to staff, that are set by the policymakers, that set a direction so that every action that the Board of Supervisors makes is aligned with their long-term goals. So as a member of the Board of Supervisors, I intend to initiate a strategic planning process so that we can hold them accountable and direct policy the way we intend to.
Mr. Swanola, what specifically would you do to bring new productive industry, small or large, into our county?
I mean, we can't avoid franchises and other corporations wanting to come to our county. I believe there's a place for them in Ukiah, but we can stop them from entering into the outlying parts of our county. And in order to create a thriving industry you speak of, we would have to start supporting small business owners. I know that when I started my small business, I had to choose between a website and business cards or paying the county my startup fees and the state my LLC tax. And I had to choose the state tax and the county fee, and I went 8 months without a website or business cards. Eventually, I prevailed past that. I made some money. I got going. In my third year now, I don't feel that adverse effects of those taxes because I'm now making enough to cover those. But helping startups and people that want to start up businesses gain funding so that they can do it. This place was built on the backbone of small business owners. Why we're going away from that and allowing franchises and corporations to come in and decrease the economic multiplier effect of the dollar in our community is beyond me. I'd have to talk to previous generations as to why that's now happening.
Ms. Roden?
Well, there are 8 million people who live within 2.5 hours of Mendocino County, which means that there's a gigantic market for Mendocino County products and of our small entrepreneurs. We just need to connect those small businesses to the larger market. A lot of these businesses are agriculture-related businesses, and their success depends on our ability to relicense the Potter Valley Project. The Potter Valley Project, it's imperative that succeeds. Our economic livelihood of Mendocino County depends on it. So does fixing the housing crisis. Housing depends on a consistent and sustainable water supply. But most importantly, I look at economic development as there's an opportunity that the most pressing problems in our county are opportunities to grow the economy. Housing, for example, construction jobs, those are all living wage jobs.
Ms. Mulhern?
Government jobs make up 22% of our workforce, and industry jobs relating to tourism and retail make up another 27% combined. Industries like manufacturing and construction only make up about 10%. We need to support the local innovators that have come in this community, like Factory Pipe and Maverick, before we lose them, like we have Retech and Pamela's products. We need broadband access to support a growing economy in the tech industry that isn't limited by location. Strong partnerships like the one just created with the Community Foundation will hopefully move the needle on that stalled project. We also need to create an employable workforce. Our youth are the future of the industry in Mendocino County, and we need to give them the skills to become future innovators and leaders. We can't grow our economy if people don't have a place to live. Housing creates community connections, and we need to create housing of all types so employers have a place for their employees to live.
Okay, I'm going to ask a follow-up question, same as to the previous group of candidates. Should the county have a department of economic development and or a director of economic development? Ms. Roden.
The county did have somebody in charge of economic development. I'm not sure about that. That's an issue that I would like to look into further. I was going to say something else about economic. Could you repeat the question real quick?
Right. It's a follow-up question that I asked regarding economic development of the other group of candidates in trying to, you know, the goal being to attract or develop industry,
right.
Productive industry here. What role should the county itself play in it? Should there be a department of economic development as part of the county, and should there and or a director of economic development?
We don't necessarily need a director or a department of economic development. That's something that could use some further research. We do have a wonderful agency called the Economic Development Finance Corporation that does a lot of work in cultivating local businesses, and so does the West Company. So I think those should be our first line go-to for the county for economic development.
Ms. Mulhern?
Sure. So Brent Schultz, the current planning director, is a mastermind whiz at economic development, and I'm grateful that the county has him. One of the things that's happening currently with the West Company and the Economic Development Finance Corporation is that there needs to be more collaboration. Oftentimes, when nonprofits are in between executive directors, it's a good time to talk about collaborating and combining. The City of Ukiah recently combined the Greater Ukiah Chamber of Commerce, the Ukiah Main Street Program, and Visit Ukiah to become the Greater Ukiah Business and Tourism Alliance. This new agency supports three different functions and consolidates all of the work and effort into one house, and the County of Mendocino should absolutely look at what kind of collaborations they can build with other local nonprofits.
Mr. Swanila?
I absolutely believe we need an economic development department. We do not need another high-paying job in this community of something that the community can do. I'm a local business owner. I'm working with a group called Cameo and Leap. We're both doing a small business economic analysis of the community that we are presenting, and it was in partner with EDFC and SBDC or SBD. And I worked with them when I started my business. I went in and, you know, I looked at everything they said, and if I had followed every step that they had told me, I would have taken out about a $50,000 loan, and I've already done my cash flow analysis. I'd have been bankrupt a year ago. So they are great. They have their place, and when I'm ready to take that loan out and can actually afford it, they are the place to go. However, they're so desperate to loan out money because there's not enough people to loan it to that sometimes people take those monies. I believe they have a 27% non-payback rate. So that shows you that the people taking those loans are not able to pay them back. And it's because our local community does not support small businesses. I could beat that into everybody's head over and over and over again. We are not supported. The small businesses of this community are thrown under the bus every single time. It doesn't matter what the ruling that comes. It's always against the small businesses.
Okay. What are your priorities? Budgeting the funds, available funds for the county, and where does increasing the pay of county employees fall on this list of priorities?
You first?
You first.
Thank you. So I'm very proud to have the endorsement of the county employees, SEIU 1021. They are the backbone of the county. They provide the services that our community receives every day. It's important that our workers have a living wage. We currently have county employees that are living out of their vehicles. That is unacceptable. We must support the people that are serving our community, and their wages are very important. Can you repeat there was another part I'm missing.
Well, the bottom line question was where does increasing the pay of county employees fall?
Sure. So, yeah, the county employees are a really large priority. We also have many other needs in our community, the roads, ambulance service, broadband. I could go on and on about the needs of our community. So what we need to do is have a really good plan to make strategic plans every year with the Board of Supervisors to look at the needs and adjust, because it's not always going to be the same from year to year, and we need to make sure that we are not being reactive. We need to make sure that we have a plan and we understand what's going to happen in the future, especially when it comes to financial needs.
Mr. Swanila?
I believe 100% that the boots on the ground employees in this community, especially the IHSS workers that are taking care of a vulnerable population, are far underpaid. You can look to many overpaid positions in the city and fathom why there are people making more than the governor of California. And it just comes over and over again. And I know some people say, well, that's not a fair comparison. But at the end of the day, a person who's in charge of a $200 billion budget, or I believe. In that realm, should not be getting paid less than a person in charge of a 15,000 person town. We need to pay the people that are taking care of the people and the people that are boots on the ground more money so that they can rise out of poverty. And it takes us all back to the question that we tied into earlier. You're never going to solve the problem of the ACEs and the poverty in this community if you continue to have a top-heavy administrative-ran community.
Ms. Roden?
Well, I think it's about 70% of the county's budget is restricted funding, non-discretionary. It doesn't leave a lot of room for the Board of Supervisors to fund things, other things. But I applaud the current Board of Supervisors and the recent contract that they made with SEIU employees because it represents a commitment to employees. It recognizes that in the past 10 years, there's been too much turnover of county staff, and it's because they've had to suffer through rollbacks in their pay and so on. So this commitment, this new contract, is telling staff that we value them, that morale is important, that they're the ones who do the work of the county, and that they're valued. It ensures living wages. They're the people who run the county, and we need to support them.
Thank you. All right, I'm going to ask one last question, and then we'll go to closing statements. Starting with Mr. Swanala, how will you inspire at least two other members on the Board of Supervisors to support your ideas and positions that you have presented tonight?
I don't believe it's my job to inspire anyone on the board or collude with anybody to come on to my opinions and to vote with me. I believe that it's my job to listen to the people of the community and present what they want. And if the other people don't vote in my direction, the time will tell.
Okay. Ms. Roden?
Well, I think it's critical to establish relationships with everyone on the Board of Supervisors. It's only through relationships that we can get our work done. It takes three votes to get anything done on the Board of Supervisors. I think my good reputation of getting along with people, getting things done, working together and collaborating is the beginning of being able to form partnerships and relationships with my fellow board members.
Ms. Mulhern.
Thank you. Yes, as a matter of fact, you can't get anything done without three votes. And so it is important that you have relationships with your colleagues on the Board of Supervisors. I think that I've proven as a leader that not only am I collaborative, but I'm going to dig in and get the work done. Whether that's in my district or yours, I'm willing to roll up my sleeves and help you solve problems every day. I've traveled all over this county. It's a beautiful place to be. I love Covelo. Happy to help the third district supervisor anytime he needs me to attend a meeting or support him in any way. And I have discussed at length with Ted Williams several ideas or topics regarding homelessness and the ambulance problem. So I think that building relationships is something that I'm very good at and something I'm already working towards.
Okay, time for final statements. Did I start at the right end? All right, then Ms. Mulhern will start at your end of the podium. Yeah, 1 minute for final statement.
Thank you.
Closing statement.
So this election is about selecting the candidate who is ready to hit the ground running to move our county forward to tackle today's challenges and plan for future generations. I've dedicated my time to creating a community that we can all be proud of. There is more work to do. Please visit my website at moformendo.com to learn about my accomplishments and my goals. Last year, I served as the mayor. And if you visit the City of Ukiah City Council website, you can see which boards and ad hocs I'm on. So what will I do as a supervisor? I am committed to finding shelter for those in our community that sleep on the streets at night. I will work to create opportunities for our children to thrive. I will create a cultural liaison positions for our Native American and Latinx communities. I will seek every opportunity to create housing for our hardworking families. I will continue my responsiveness in communicating with the public so that your needs can be met by your local government. I am committed to local economic development that benefits all sectors and all members of the community. I will be proactive in helping the Measure B committee provide a location to assist the mentally ill. I will actively support the Climate Action Advisory Committee and look at every decision that we make as supervisors to make sure that we are achieving our climate goals. There's so much more, but you'll have to go to my website to read it. I'll email it to you.
Mr. Swanila.
I decided to run for supervisor because I wasn't seeing current issues addressed in ways that I felt bettered our community as a whole. Result-based accountability is not taking place, and key problems are not changing for the better. Through my volunteerism in this community, I believe I've gained an extensive insight into the needs of the public. As an elected supervisor of the 2nd District, I will fight for financial transparency and for this community to have everything that it deserves and that it already is not getting from leadership. In closing, I'm asking every eligible voter in the community to research the candidates, do some homework, go to all our websites. Hopefully it's for me in the end, but if not, thank you for just voting, because it's not common that everybody votes. When I'm knocking on doors, I'm learning this. For more information about me, please visit my website at joel.joelforsupervisor.com. Pick up my paperwork in the back. It has all the information you need. And my name is Joel Swanila. I'm running for 2nd District Supervisor, a.k.a. Mr. Swanula.
Ms. Roden.
I love Mendocino County. Ukiah has been my home for more than 28 years. During that time, I've made it my business to be involved in every aspect of making our community better. My work writing grants to support our area's most innovative and successful programs, as well as my 3 terms on the City Council, have given me a bird's eye view of the complexities of our challenges. It's also clarified the pathways to our success. I've built collaborative relationships with the county staff and nonprofit partners who do much of the work to make positive change in our community. But it doesn't end there. Building a better Mendocino County will take everyone doing what they can, and I'm prepared to serve as 2nd District Supervisor. I ask for your vote on March 3rd. I also have a website, mariroden.com.
Okay. Thank you all very much.
This has been a recording of a forum for the candidates for the 2nd District Mendocino County Supervisors race. It was recorded Tuesday, January 28th at the Ukiah City Council Chambers. The primary election is March 3rd. To hear the entire forum, go to the Elections 2020 page on the KZYX website at kzyx.org. I'm Alicia Bales. Thanks for listening.